people, welcome to another episode of the Concurrency Podcast. In this podcast, I'll be co-hosting this with Jack. Yeah, Jack is back. Say hi, man.
Yeah, finally, first time this year. What are we discussing? What are we talking about?
Yeah, so today we have one of our good friends and one of the friends of the podcast, the man himself, Daniel Katumbi. What's up, man?
Amazing. It felt so nice to be referred to as a friend of the podcast. Yes. to anyone who wants to also be known as a friend of the podcast, reach out to Steve and throw in a little donation. Thanks.
Yeah, we accept donations. So today we are here to talk about open source and just a bit about what open source means to the tech community and how to get started in open source, not only as a contributor, but as a maintainer, is essentially having your own open source project. Yeah, but before we start, just a bit of a backstory. This is not your first time on the podcast.
Yeah. I was actually joking with someone and telling them, I'm going to host the other podcast somewhere and have it on my portfolio for people who want to know what shenanigans you did last time and why it was never released. It's going to be one of those unreleased episodes.
And what happened is, so we wanted to have you on the pod, and essentially we usually have pre-calls. So we have a pre-call with you. This thing was supposed to be 15 minutes long. We talked for 3 hours. And I remember it was on a Friday evening. So on Saturday, Herman, Jack, and I were meeting, and we started talking, and then we were like, damn, yesterday we talked to this guy for 3 hours, and it was an extremely wholesome conversation, but no one is ever going to hear about it. No one is ever going to know what we talked about. Damn.
Man. That was so sad. We talked about literally everything and everything. We talked about from web to Android. We talked about hardware with Jack for like a good 30, 45 minutes. We talked about everything.
We talked about Sky Garden's problems at the time and problems in the tech, in the Kenyan tech and startup ecosystem. We talked about Silicon Valley. We talked,
China,
man,
manufacturing.
Man, crazy. That's crazy.
And then now we did a recording of the episode. Ooh. And we couldn't use it. Not we couldn't. It is there. It still lives. But then maybe when the right time comes, we're going to release it.
The unreleased episode. I love unreleased episodes, like when I'm watching a TV show. Like, I'm always very eager to watch the unreleased, and I'm confused, why wasn't this released? In case you're wondering, no, we did not say something that could not be aired. Because because if anyone is like me, they're probably like, why didn't they release that episode first? In all reality, we just disagreed on the origin of goats, and then we had a very heated argument about the origin of goats. Yeah. So if you're wondering, yeah.
Okay. So I think it's we look forward to like having a better recording, and a good episode talking about like open source. And my perspective on open source is that open source is an alternative to like proprietary software, right? And an interesting part of it is calling it an alternative, because you can either go for proprietary or go for open source software. But there are pros and cons for each. You choose open source, there are things you have to forego or things that you gain when you go to closed source software. Probably one is cost, right? For closed source software. So maybe just from your experience, why do you prefer open source software to proprietary? Just why open source software?
Oh, that's an interesting question. there's a friend of mine who recently, not recently, sometime back, he asked me, like, so I have this really cool thing and I want to open source it. Like, it was in a private repo and I was like, I really want to open source it. I was like, then do something. Like, but how do I make money out of it? Why am I giving my hard work for free? At that moment, I genuinely didn't have an answer. I was like, I don't know, it's nice. So for me, one of the coolest things about open source is that, one, it's free. So it will never, there'll never come a time when I'm thinking between something that's free and not free, and I'm like, oh, let me go pay. Realistically, if the quality is as good, I'll always go open source, because open source for me is usually, I feel like it's really easily accessible. Like, I can just go to GitHub, fork a repo, and I can even make customizations that suit me, right? Which I find really cool. So it's the concept of just open source, like, technology is open to anyone, for everyone, is really interesting. But I do, echoing the concerns of my friend, monetizing open source is something we have not yet figured out, but yeah, that's a whole other discussion.
But okay, we're talking about open source. I think one of my kind of, what's the difference between closed source software and open source software? Definitely a legal issue, a license, right? So yeah. Possibly, does me having a private GitHub repo and then like taking it public make it now open source? But basically not, right?
Technically it's not, yeah. But they do. No, it's still open source when you think about it. Because I think by default GitHub prints, does GitHub give you a license by default by the, oh, only if you choose to. Only if you choose, yeah. So if you had chosen to, and it becomes open source. But also, if it does not have a license, legally it's not open source, but technically it is, because anyone can use your technology. If you feel like, okay, someone shouldn't use my technology, then slap a license on it. Otherwise, you do not have a claim to it, because it's public and it's out in the domain. It's like putting a football in the middle of the road and hoping no one kicks it.
Okay.
Because if it's on the internet, it's going to be used. So if you feel like, hey, I'm not comfortable with this, this is my intellectual property, then slap a license on it. Otherwise, it is technically open source. And I feel like you yourself are aware of what you're doing by putting it public, right? Just because it doesn't have stars and whatnot. I have a repo that has 40 stars just because it was a demo. It was an article. Like, I wrote an article, and that repo is always like getting new visitors and stars and people raising issues and asking me, how do I compile this? I'm like, ugh. But you get the point. Like, I've never advertised it anywhere. I've never put it out anywhere. It just exists. It's an article that exists, but people find it and use it. So it, legally it's not open source, but I will say technically it is.
Okay, that's interesting. So how do you get paid for open source? I think you raised that issue. Like, this is definitely just open sourcing software or some that you created. Somebody else can take it and use it for something and make money out of it, and you make 0 cents.
Yeah, but that also depends with your license. There are licenses that actually, like Linux, you really cannot make Linux. You really cannot make a profit or sell Linux, really. But also, people are really finding like creative ways around it. Around the legal mumbo jumbo, right? And a good case was the Elasticsearch and Amazon issue, where Amazon was like really, really killing this small startup whose main technology was open source. Then these guys were like, you know what? We don't need you guys. They forked their repo and made their own version. I feel like that was a bit legal, but also a bit sketchy. It's legal, but it's a bit sketchy. So the thing with open source, it's like the concept itself is amusing, but there's no regulation towards open source, so it's like the wild, wild jungle out there. People do crazy things, right? But also, so ways people make money is, one, if your license, you can structure licenses that allow you to kind of get some returns from it. Though that's not really a really popular means, as far as I've seen. One of the main means of open source making money is, people's gratitude and fame, you know. Yeah, because when you think about it, people who make some really cool software, really, from my experience, Like, I would say like a good 80% of them, like, low-key have good jobs and make a shit ton of money. That was a joke, by the way. But the truth, most people make money out of open source from I won't say contributions, from people or from donations, that's one, and sponsoring. So you'll see something like, I don't know if you've ever gone to Vue.js's GitHub and you can see the amount of sponsors the Vue.js project has. That's a lot of sponsors. And theoretically, that could pay the creator. Like, if it was a solo, with that amount of contribution as a solo engineer, that is enough. That is way more than a 9-to-5 job, right? So that's really cool. So sponsoring is still something people are still getting, like, you know, the hang of, like, okay, it's open source, but I have to sponsor you. So it's just, I'm essentially buying it, technically.
Yeah.
So it's something people are still trying to wrap their mind around. It needs for you to sponsor, I think it needs you to, like, twin off the whole open source versus corporate software. They just, and think of it like, hey, I really like this thing and I'm choosing to support this creator so that they can continue making quality products. Yeah, right? They're not really turning in a profit or anything. Yeah, they need to live. They have kids who need to go to school and whatnot. So I am giving back to this person as my way of saying thank you. Yeah. So I feel like that's a new mental model that's really coming up. And I feel like that's truly the future of open source in terms of people monetizing their intellectual property.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, with open source, this also comes a foundation, right? Most open source kind of projects have a foundation behind it if it gets so big enough, right? So there are people who also get paid. Like, you get hired to work on open source stuff, right? Because there are a lot of people who depend on it. It needs to be stable. New features have to be added in. And also, since it's open source, anybody can contribute to it, right? There has to be somebody or some people who have to verify that all these things that are being added meet a particular standard to that. Yeah, so I think this is also an avenue of getting employed to work on open source. And it's easier to, and the way you get to work for an open source is if you have a track record in open source, right? I don't think it's easier for just coming out of a closed source thing and getting hired for, you might, if you're good enough, good. But if you've been contributing to open source, you have a track record working in open source, then it's easier for people to trust you to maintain or kind of be in charge of an open source project and get paid for it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, it all boils down to trust as well. Yeah, that just boils down to trust. And the other thing on foundations, yeah, I have seen, not just foundations, like, you could find, like, Redis. Redis, is Redis open source? Good question. But I don't know why I thought Redis. But you find companies like, these guys have, like, a really cool open source software that we all use, but they have a consultancy, for example, that is so specialized in using this specific technology, right? And so that is always an alternative way of making money and even hiring people now to even work on that, right? A good example is there's this React Native library called React Native Paper, and it's done by, oh my God, do not forget this name. It's a really slim... React Native Paper. Who created React Native Paper? I remember these guys are responsible for React Native on PS5, right? Call Stack. Yes, it's Call Stack. Yep. So, sorry, that name. I don't know. I was thinking Confluence. Right. So, okay. Like, you can see, Call Stack is a consultancy, and they have worked on amazing projects, right? But you know, now they have engineers who work on React Native Paper, right? Same to Vercel with Next.js. Next.js is open source, but, you know, they have another business that funds. So that's not necessarily that the foundation itself, but people can now leverage the newfound fame from this open source project to run a business that in return brings back funds to the open source project. Yeah. So to be a maintainer, definitely you may have to prove your trust either by working on that project for a while or, yeah, but the idea of open source is anyone can contribute regardless of your skill level. Yeah, if you want to go fix a typo, yeah, that's cool. It means you're good in English, so.
Why do I feel like I'm being attacked in this conversation?
You're being attacked. You can go fixing typos on repositories so that you get, like, contributor badges.
But I definitely, but I usually when people ask me, how do you get into open source? I'm like, I don't know, start by fixing typos and writing docs. That's usually, people forget that when people think open source, they think, oh, let me go create a banger feature, right? Let me go to Android and add, I don't know, support for Android phones. I don't know, can detect you walking and shout something. I don't know. People assume that you're going to be building something like Linux, but you know, I don't know, go to a repo that is maintained by someone, you know, read the docs. If the docs are not clear enough, contribute, offer to contribute, right? You do not even have to understand the language, the technology that they're doing, but you know, if you're going to use it and you feel like, since I'm going to be using this for a while and you know, this documentation is bogus, yeah, feel free to just raise a PR, do a good documentation that is still open source. Yeah, open source is right.
Nice.
Yeah, but I kind of think the easiest way to contribute to an open source project is through the documentation, right? Because mostly the technical person who builds the software is not good. They have a lot of underlying knowledge into how the software works, right? So the documentation is probably not much suitable for a beginner, somebody who's just looking at it for the first time.
That is true. It's engineers, we often do that. Like, we get so lost in the technicalities, right? And sometimes you usually just need someone to come and be like, for what I'm trying to explain, so I've built something like is X plus Y is going to be equal Z. This is so mind-blowing. Someone is going to be like, oh, so Z, you know, right? And someone who can explain Z without, going, and if they choose to go deep into the details, express that in a readable format, that person is genuinely gifted. And I feel like most engineers really need to, and it's a skill people can learn, so yeah. So if the person who is creating the tech is so like technical, like, you know, take up by the docs. That is an amazing way to start.
Yeah,
fix a typo.
Already by this person doing this project and making it open source, they already have an idea of what they want and the direction in which they want to push the project. And so it becomes very difficult, especially it becomes very challenging. If there's no good documentation, you can't really tell this is a feature that would be useful, or if you don't actually use that thing, you wouldn't tell this is a feature that would be useful or this is something that is required. Just a bit of two examples. I have been maintaining this project called tosomany.com, and we happened to lose all our data on Heroku, and I had a couple of people reach out to me and they wanted to contribute, and their issue was, why is the backend written in Java? And I was like, there's no specific reason. It is just because at that moment it was written in Java and they wanted to rewrite it to Node.js. And I was like, we already have a backend in Java. I understand you want to write Node.js, but then the effort you want to put into it and everything. And then I was like, okay, cool. You want to write it in Node.js? It's okay. And they did. The other one is, okay, no, I'll tell the other one later. Okay.
Sure. Do tell. I'm curious.
So you have an open source project.
I have like a GitHub full of them.
Okay, so let us pick one of them, Ranta. So Ranta is this random idea that you that you say you have. Jack is a contributor on Ranta. He fixed that typo 3 hours ago.
In the me, yeah.
And
it took me time to find that.
Okay. And so if you remember, I was having a lot of problems just trying to contribute to Ranta, because I'm looking at your documentation and it absolutely makes sense. You're going to a bit talk about it. But then for me, it made sense what you're trying to do. But then I'm trying to look at certain things. And if you remember from what I texted you and I told you, how are you actually testing this thing? And then you told me you're not testing. So this guy is writing code and hoping it works. So I ended up telling you, oh, so you're doing how did you call it? You're doing
I can't remember what I called it.
Yeah,
let me
something like
that. Look at myself.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it was something like a blind driven development or something.
Yeah.
So, the idea that you're just writing code and then just hoping that it works.
Yeah, we called it something along those lines, and I remember telling it, "I am a pioneer in the field." No, so for me, I was genuinely the same thing. For me, it was such a weird thing. Like, the minute I realized, oh wait, I can actually do this, and then I got so engulfed in the idea of it being a possibility that I forgot to actually test if this works. So I actually halted development for a while to just test it. To test like the few components that I had built, yeah. But yeah, blindness driven coding, yeah, that's a thing. We're making a thing. That's terrible design, terrible decision, but yeah.
Yeah, so I think we can talk about it because we actually haven't said what it is and what it does. So yeah, could you talk about some of the open source things that you've done and yeah.
So Ranta is really crazy. So in December, during the Christmas holiday, for mobile, I usually do Flutter. I like Flutter. It's a cool idea. I like the structure behind Flutter. I like the organization. I have opinions about Flutter, but I won't give those here. But I love Flutter. It's a really nice framework for building apps like from zero. And I've been doing Flutter for a while now. So one day, like there's this idea I had, right? And I wanted to build it. But I was working on a React project at the time for work. And I felt like the context switch was going to be a bit too much. And so I decided, since I'm writing React, maybe I should try React Native. I've always wanted to try React Native, and this is a chance. I have an idea for an app. Let me just build it, right? So I started doing React Native, and I quickly realized, like, oh, okay, maybe Flutter had spoiled me a bit. And so I felt like I was using Expo, and one thing I liked about Expo is how everything is just so smooth to do, everything is easy. But I specifically struggled with building UI, and it's because, not because I can't write UI, it's just because I was like, for mobile, I was already used to a certain, like, you know, flow when writing UI using Flutter, right? You know, there's a flow, you know, there's a scaffold, and then, you know, the scaffold and the upper, and it flows out, right? And then now I'm back here writing now UI using Tailwind. So both of those approaches work, but I was feeling, what if I could have the best of both worlds? What if I could write my UI for React Native using Flutter, or a Flutter-like, you know, component library? So I didn't think the idea for doing that question came to me way later, I think in Jan. Now, like, way, like a few months in, after my app is already built, I'm already building it. And then, like, one day I was just having a discussion with a friend, shout out Giza. I pitched the idea, and I could see it in his eyes. He was like, this guy is nuts. So you want to build Flutter in React Native? I was like, not exactly, but yeah. Yeah, it's just one of those crazy ideas. But yeah, it's just an interesting project that I'm working on, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, even the first time you told me about it, I saw it from your GitHub activity, and then I read what you're trying to do. And I was like, literally, you're trying to take React Native, the good parts of React Native and the good parts of Flutter, and just building them into Ranta. So Ranta would essentially be the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I thought it was interesting, but I also thought it was insane.
it is to a huge extent. It is. I mean, there isn't like really a lot, because even like I think about that a lot. Like we in React Native, we do have React Native Paper, which is amazing, which offers you like those material new components. And actually in the project I'm using React Native Paper, so I think what I'm exactly building is just the beliefs behind Flutter's component system, Flutter's way of routing, because I feel like it will be really cool to have that right in React Native. So yeah. Oh, I was actually I wasn't really confident in the project, so I wasn't like telling people, because people would be like, what? I'm like, but yeah, it's interesting to because I'm constantly learning how Flutter works under the hood. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully we get to see the end of it. If you'd like to contribute to Ranta, there'll be a link in the description notes. So go there, create your issues. Don't fix typos like Jack. Push a couple of components. Yeah, okay. If you want to fix typos and if you want to write the documentation, also feel free. I've not even made it on the main on the contributors list yet. I have.
I should probably. Yeah, your PR has been here for almost 2 months. I'll match it. I promise.
Steve, okay. Raises a question. Yeah. You read the documentation.
Have you ever read my project readmes? They're usually not for everyone. They're usually like scripts for stand-up comedy. Okay, not for that. Imagine if developers met up and everyone was supposed to read their readmes, the funniest readmes. I usually try to make mine as funny as possible, so that if you get to that point where we are in a meetup and then everyone is like, oh, so that we warm the floor, let us read some of the readmes.
I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
You best laugh at the readme, because you'll rather laugh at the readme rather than the code.
Yeah. I mean even years. Sometimes yeah. you read a line and then you're like, oh yeah, this dude was just wilding here.
Yeah, I'm gonna add that in a readme one day. Like, I'm gonna build a project and the readme is like, I'm making you laugh in the readme because the code is a joke.
Because Daniel was string, to be funny. He was string.
I was string, yeah. But you know, like, sometimes when I'm writing readme, I'm just like writing for the sake. Like, I just want you to, like, if someone ever looks at this, they need to get the gist of it. So I'm just like, brrr, you get the gist, we move.
Yeah, one of my most famous lines in my reviews is usually, I did not have the mental capacity for this. And it is just to show a bit of, I was too lazy to do it, but then it is important. If you want to do it, you can do it. But then I thought about it, but then I did not have the mental capacity for it. So I'm usually like, I thought I would implement it this way, but then I did not have the mental capacity for it.
And that is a genuine thing. That is so genuine, because even sometimes, like, when you're writing code, you think to yourself, I can go this way, but I can also not, because who has the energy for that, right?
Yeah.
It's a genuine concern. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apart from that, like, yeah. I'm a member of open source community Africa, and we have like a budding community of open source project. I think the React Devs Nairobi website is also maintained. There you can contribute to other websites, like the SheCode website. We have another website and other projects, both Android, Flutter. Join the Telegram group. Yeah.
So, something interesting that I saw happening with the React Devs KE and the SheCode Africa websites. Before actual development happened, there was a lot of sort of sensitization and also trying to make the projects as easy as possible for people to get started with. And is that a policy that the Open Source Community Africa holds, or was that generally your own preferences?
The first one. One of the hardest things, and even I bet you, everyone who does a bit of open source has faced this conundrum, yeah? It's not really a conundrum, problem, where someone tells you, yeah, you know, you need to understand code better, you definitely have to do open source. And then you go to a repo and then you're like, sir, where do I start? You go to the issues and none of these issues, you have any idea about what's happening. And you go to the PRs and you look at the shenanigans people are doing. They are, bro, mad things, right? And they're just there, like, what do I do now? you fix a typo, then you go, and then you come back. There are no other typos to fix. So you write a PR with a typo, so you can fix it later, right? And so, yeah, and that's usually a huge barrier of entry. That Open source projects forget that the point is to be open source. The point is to be easier for anyone. But also that comes with the task of having a lot of empathy, right? Empathy for people, future contributors, right? And I feel like in the whole shebang of writing code, and open source is a lot of work because you do not have a schedule. Everyone is doing their own thing. You're supposed to marshal up a lot of people, keep organization. So it's a whole, keep communication open. So it's a whole shebang. And I feel like in the middle of that, like a lot of empathy is lost, right? And so one of the things is to distribute tasks, like, and make it easier to attract new contributors, right? I feel like that is where the empathy really comes into play. So even with those projects, we broke the tasks down to very simple things, unless like someone came up with something was like a bit technical and be like, yeah, sure, if you want to do the technical thing, have fun. But the idea for the sensitization was because we were trying to get as many people into like open source as possible, so we needed to lower the barrier. And we had like, for personally, I know that is something that happened to me, like I really genuinely want to contribute to this project, but for a while I was stuck doing just triage, right? So until I could understand the ins and out of the project, and I couldn't help much because I'm not that technical, but hey, I could write docs, I could do triage for issues, you know. So until like I was so familiar with the project, and so that was months, and then I could like, oh, okay, I think I can tackle this one, right? Yeah. So now that's when I now maybe started doing the technical bit. But what if we could like just lower the barrier a bit for non-technical, for people who are not already contributors, to be like, oh, maybe this is a first-timer issue, and especially for the junior developers, open source can really build your understanding of large scale projects. So I felt it was more of an empathy thing rather than a policy. We felt, but it was something for the specific maintainers, just decided to be like, hey, maybe this would be a good idea to do this, so you can invite more people to learn and contribute. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure whether I'm supposed to say this, but then I have a reputation of saying things I'm not supposed to say.
On today's episode of Ben's, of Steve's Hot Takes, go. We are going to clip this, by the way.
Opinions that are brought about by Steve, and he said he's alone.
So there's a future of the concurrency podcast and the concurrency just itself, the concurrency of being an open source media focused, an open source developer focused media company. And we have had multiple conversations about this, maybe two or one and a half about this. And one of our biggest thoughts is usually around how do we build a community around what we decide to do, and or around the podcast. And so my question would be, how do you build a community around open source and something open source that you're doing?
That's interesting. Yeah, have you ever gone to GitHub, like you're looking for something and you find there's an open source repo for that, and that has like a whole community on Discord? That's crazy, right? That happened to me recently. Like I was working on this thing, and Zendesk's API have terrible documentation. So I was looking for someone who has simplified this into maybe a package, and then I found a package, and I found that it has like a couple of maintainers, and they're actively maintaining this project. And I was like, wow, this is interesting. And so there's always that misconception that open source has to be like a huge project. It doesn't. But if you want to build the product itself will always build the community, right? There are so many good projects out there that are open source but don't have really a huge community. I had the honor of being not really a contributor, just being in the community of one of a very famous npm package, has like 4 million downloads a month or something. But the community is only like 5-10 people, because people don't see why I need to be in a community to maintain this. So the community is basically just like, oh, there's a chat room that has like like I would say max 12, 15 people, right? And this thing is constantly used. It has so many stars on GitHub, but it doesn't have a community. So the community solely really depends on the product itself. Is the product really, really widely used? And if it's widely used, do people really want to build a community? Because community is all about, hey, I'm interested in this. I want to be a part of this. Hey, you know, its community is its own thing. Like, how do I explain this? People need to want to be in your community for you to build a community. It's really hard to build a community if people do not want to join your community, right? And I've seen that before. I've seen it even with startups like trying to build a community, but you know, people just don't want to join your community. You know, no hard feelings. Just, I mean, do I really want to join a community where we talk about this product every day? I mean, meh. If the answer is yes, then that person will join a community. But also, one way to open source is, yeah, be an evangelist for the open source project, right? And that is how communities actually grow. People talking about it, people doing tutorials, people writing articles about it. That is how communities grow. So that is always another way of contributing to open source that most people don't realize. Hey, be an evangelist for this thing. Speak about it. Ask your friends to use it, right? Because if you really, really believe in this software and this piece of software and it's open source, yeah, do it for free. Volunteer, write articles, do a YouTube video, do a whole explainer video, write documentation. That is how a community is built, by people evangelizing the idea, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, I feel like I've been preaching. My throat is sore. I should probably be a pastor in my next life, man.
Daniel, yes. Now that I've made Rant an open source project better, do you feel like I'm part of the community?
It depends. Do you want to join the community? Hey, we can have a WhatsApp group of contributors. And then when we are like more than 200, then we graduate to the... This is like a milestone in like open source projects, when you graduate to having a Discord, bro. You are truly certified now. An open source project, if you have a Discord with active users, yeah, and that Discord has to have like a meme section, right? Yeah, and a job section, yeah. So join the community, guys.
So my next question comes with regards to like open source, and I think I went through your open source project when I was fixing that very important piece of information that was misspelled.
yeah.
But then typically comes with a code of conduct, because they're meant to deal with a majority of people. There's a code of conduct that has to be abided by, right? I call them graybeards. So once in a while, a graybeard shows up. They've been doing this thing for the last 30, 40 years. They're like, you guys are doing the wrong thing. I want us to move in this direction. How do you decide in an open source project which direction?
Yeah. So different open source projects have like different ways of doing it. And so for most, I think they have a more of democratic kind of way. Like, yo, do you guys think we should do this? If you do think you should do this, give reasons, you know. There's always that democratic, but I know a lot of open source projects have like a core team, and people who are not in the core team really can't do major changes. So in terms of features, directions, those are made by the core team or the core team members. And those core team members are like, if they say we're doing this, we're doing this. The rest of the contributors maybe have tiers. I will give like an example of Electron. I know they are tiers, like they're tier level developers, right? Ranks, depending on your tier, the advises how much control you have over the project. But so like open source communities are self-governing, so that is all. The code of conduct depends solely on the community, right? And some communities will be like, hey, you want to do this? Hey, sure. You want to change the logo? Have fun. Yeah, right. Where they embrace that kind of free. But I feel like from my experience, most open source projects have like a decision-making process, right? It's just not so random. Because especially if it's a huge ass project like Electron or something, you really, really need to have a group of 5 to 10 people who are like, who have been building this from or maintaining this thing or contributing for a minute, and you know, they are trusted in this space, right? Yeah.
Okay, but like, is an open source kind of project allowed to pivot? Because let's say you start a project now, this is the goal that you want to achieve. I join you because I'm interested in achieving a similar goal, right? So there's the two of us starting out. 5 months down the line, we are like 50 people, then 48 of you decide, now we want to go this other direction.
If you feel like you're going... I don't know, man. That solely depends on the because if it were me, I would just be like, hey, you guys, this was my vision. If you have your own vision, fuck the repo, go make your own version. I mean, it's open source. You can do. You are technically really allowed to do that. Like, it's not a big deal if you do that, right? And those are some of the dangers of open source. Like, it's, as I said, it's not really regulated, so it's the wild, wild web. I don't know if you guys remember the guy who created Color, and was it? Who created Chalk and this library for fake data, Faker.js. Yeah, Faker. So this guy who created Faker, remember what happened with that, right? This guy was the sole contributor to this, and one day he just decided, yeah, you know what, you all are not paying me for this, I'm out. And the whole tech industry grinded to a halt, man, because of one repo, because of one person. So open source is the wild, wild west. So And suggesting that it be regulated goes against the whole, like, right? Goes against the whole point. And so regulation solely now depends on the communities, right? And that is one of the dangers of open source, because you have, well, you have control over the project, because if you feel like you're not enjoying this, oh, hey, go fork your own, customize it to your own liking. But also, so many people are at the mercy of a community. And that is scary. So many important technologies are actually in the mercy of communities. So yeah.
Yeah, I like that phrase. Go fork your own thing. It's like just saying fuck off.
Go fork yourself. I mean, the one who's going to fuck the repo yourself.
Yeah. So if you're working on something interesting and then you find someone fucked it, and then they're doing way more interesting stuff, so the phrase would be, oh, this fucker.
Nice. all is fair in love and war and open source.
Yeah.
Man, crazy.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, when it comes to making those decisions, and especially when the frustrations start coming in, it usually comes down to making that decision. I was having a conversation with Jack, that decision to, you know, what farmers do to horses, take it behind the shed and just shoot it.
Shoot it.
just shoot it. And yeah, so yeah, with open source and the whole idea of... I think one of the things that people do not understand is that open source does not necessarily mean free. Yeah, you may be using this thing, but then someone somewhere is using their resources. Someone somewhere is taking their time to do this. And I guess that is where the monetization part of it comes in. But yeah, in as much as it is open source, it is important for you to lend a hand or to lend resources to it. And yeah.
For sure, man. Yeah. That will be a noble thing to do. Because
okay.
I usually feel like if I could definitely sponsor more people. I feel like I should. And I will, soon as it's available. Is sponsoring available in Kenya? Last I checked, it wasn't, but soon as it is, I will start sponsoring people.
Sponsoring is not available in Kenya?
Last time I checked, it wasn't. But Okay, let's see. I'm going to contribute 5. Select. Oh, it is? Interesting. Well, turns out it is. Wait.
It is.
B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, E. Oh, yeah, it is now. You can sponsor.
The ability to sponsor or to be sponsored?
To sponsor someone. Great. Okay. I'm going to sponsor that guy. Now I'm already thinking of people I'm going to sponsor. Coimandres is definitely on the list. I love the amazing work these guys do. Who else will I sponsor? I'm going to need a list for this. Definitely going to sponsor Next, but they don't need my money.
They're making enough.
Yeah, they don't need my money. Who else will I sponsor? Yeah, I'll definitely make a list of people I can sponsor now. I'm definitely going to sponsor people.
Yeah. I guess that's it. Make sure you follow the Concurrency Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on Twitter at ConcurrencyPod. And if you have any concerns, any issues, make sure you shoot us an email at concurrencypod@gmail.com. And
Also, if people want to listen to the episode we never dropped and hear our intense argument about goats, send that email.
Yes. There's a poll. We are going to add a poll. So if you want to listen to that podcast, to that episode, it has not really good audio, but if you want to listen to it, just vote below. There's a poll going on. And go forth and fork everything you find.
May the fork be with you.
We've changed the meaning of fork forever. And every time someone asks you, did you fork it? Please. Okay. Anyway, bye. Bye.
Bye, guys. See you later.